If you're on Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, 11a, six lines up from the bottom, Tana Rabbanan. We had been talking about what they permitted people to do with the hide of the animal, because they're worried that if you're told you're going to lose the hide, then you're not going to shecht in the first place. That was our starting point. So building on that, they talk about the fats. Now, with the fats, you have a separate concern. They have no use for it. First of all, these fats are treif. We're not talking, you have, within an animal, you have chelev and you have shuman. So shuman is kosher, and that's like the meat. If you wanted to eat it or use it, it's not muktzah. Chelev is treif, and therefore it's muktzah. The problem is, if this guy's going to shecht the animal, 11 a.m., 11:30, 12 o'clock, whatever it is, on Yantif, and it's going to sit there, and it's hot outside, it's the Middle East, right? All day long, it's going to stink. So what are your options? One option would have been to salt the fat, and that would help preserve it. As Rashi says, it'll keep it from smelling. So Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa says, Ein molchin es ha-chalavin. You are not allowed, according to the Tanakhama, you are not allowed to salt the fat to keep it from smelling. That would not be allowed. The ein mahabchin bahen, and you're also not allowed to flip the fats. Both of these would be done as a means of preserving it so that it wouldn't smell. I guess lahapech would be maybe because of the air. The air is somehow supposed to be helpful to keep it from smelling. Mishum Rabbi Yeshua Amru Shodchan Beruach Hagav Yisaidos, but they quote Rabbi Yeshua saying what you would be allowed to do is hang them up in the open air on pegs. I don't know biologically why this should be any help. I don't know if anybody knows anything about why this would be helpful or
hanging on pegs?
Yeah. You have the Steinsaltz, what is
it?
So the air. Right, the question is, why would air prevent it from deteriorating and smelling? It's not cooling it off.
It may not. It may just mean the smell will be dissipated.
Oh, that's
it. I think it falls, like whatever liquid is there, just will drop to the bottom.
It'll fall, and therefore, and the liquid is what's causing the deterioration.
Yeah.
So maybe the loss of the liquid, or maybe the it's just that it's carrying it downwind. Like how we're saying,
exposed to the air.
Yeah. Okay. But Rabbi Yeshua says you would be allowed to do. You'd be allowed to put it out on the pegs. The Shita Mekubetz has notes on this that what you're actually doing is holding it from when you did the shechita. You did the shechita. You skin the animal. You're holding the fat, and you stick it on the pegs. So one question you have to address.
Why don't you just throw it out?
Throw it out where?
Well,
right. So if you had such a thing, sure. But remember, elsewhere in the Gemara, they talk about having an ashpa that was basically an open trash heap. It would stick. It's not as though you had closed trash bins.
Couldn't they sell it?
Sell it to whom?
Sell it for fuel.
I don't know if they're using animal fats as fuel. I mean, they are. We see it in Bamei Malikim, and they talk about fats. I guess because you can't use it that day. Unless,
you can't send anyway.
Well, on Yantif, theoretically, you could provide it to somebody. If I don't know how long it takes and what the processing is in order to make it fuel for a flame. Theoretically, I can imagine what you're describing. If my neighbor needs a candle on Yom Tov, let him use it.
That's what they used to make candles out of.
Right. I just don't know what level of processing is needed and what of those processes you might be allowed to do or not do on Yantif. That would be the open question.
Right.
So, but that's what we're saying here. Now, we are assuming in what we're saying that you're not allowed to salt it. Right? That's the very clear assumption. The Tanakhama said so. So the question is, what's wrong with salting the fat? What's the problem with doing so? So Rashi, if you flip the page for a second onto Yud Aleph Amud Beis, Rashi will make a comment in the top Rashi on Yud Aleph Amud Beis. You want the third line, Aval Hacha. He says, Aval Hacha gabe chalavim, ki sharis l'shot chan, muchacha milsa shletikun hachalavim hitarto. He says, regarding the fats, when you permit him to lay them out, it is obvious that you are permitting this for the sake of fixing the fats, fixing in the sense that they won't deteriorate. Va'asinami lemim lechinu, and he will also come to solve them. So what's wrong with solving them? Umalicha me avos malachos he bedavar sheyesh bo ibud. Salting is one of the avos malacha for anything that is subject to tanning. That's what Rashi says here. I didn't know you could tan fats. Rashi sounds like you can. The Ran says something. Well, the whole thing would definitely be a siag. But take a look at the Ran in Source Aleph, and he adds what I think is probably a key additional detail. He says, "Ein molchenes hachalavim kedei shelo yasrichu, to keep them from deteriorating. Demoleach midi deshayach beibud. You are salting something that could be tanned. Kegel chalavim like fats. Dilav ochlin gemurin hein." Because these are not foods. They're not foods because you're not allowed to eat them. They're treif. Because these aren't foods, therefore it is called tanning if you salt it, because what you're doing is to preserve it like hide, like a material, not preserve it like food. I can salt, well, I can't necessarily. I was going to say I can salt food to preserve it, but that's even that requires its own discussion. But that's the Ran's key point is that because it's not food, it's subject to ma'aved, and that's in fact brought in the Magen Avraham. It's brought in the Mishnah Berurah as well. So the solution that he offers is hang it up and say you're not allowed to salt
it. Isn't that a chana when you salt it?
If you salt it for what?
Well, for purposes of sale. Right,
so,
or whatever you're going to do with it.
Right, if it was salting it for purposes of sale and processing, then I would agree with you, in addition to ma'abe, you have a hachana problem. But he's not. He's doing it just to keep it from smelling today. So that wouldn't involve hachana. You know, if salting was part of the process of making it into candles, then I would, again, you know, then I would see a problem. But the other question you have to ask is, why don't we offer the same method that we offered with the hide?
Right.
What was our answer? How did we enable you to salt hide?
You have the meat attached to it.
Yeah.
Right.
So I should do the same thing here. The meat is sitting on the fat. They're all attached. Right? The fat is a membrane over the meat. Why not just do it with meat attached to it? So three answers here. One from the Rashba, two answers from the Ran. If you take a look on your sheet, it's source number base, letter base. He says, "V'ani mistapek im hitiru lo limlach al gabav litzli kederach shehitiru ba'or." He says, "I'm not sure whether they permitted him to salt meat on it the way they did with the hide." Sheyesh li lidon bedavar, because there's something to analyze and to discuss here. Dekeman sha'amru ba'or v'lo amru b'chalavim. Since the Gemara didn't say it regarding the fats, it only said it regarding the hide. That indicates that this, in fact, does not apply regarding the fats. The Esher the time of the Milsa, Divaporta Sagile, Vafilitzli Havale Mahabed Gamur. He says the answer, the reason may be because if you salt them a little bit, that is already sufficient for the Ma'abed type of salting of fats. Salting a hide needs a lot of salt. What you do for tzli is not anywhere near that. Therefore, you can salt it for tzli. It doesn't look like you're salting the hide. However, when you're salting the fats, you only need a minimum of salt in the first place. So that's the Rashba's answer. His answer is that you would be doing actual ma'aved, essentially. Because all that ma'aved needs, when you're dealing with fat, is a little bit of salt.
With this chaylev, okay, getting back to what Alan has said a few times, is the chaylev being thrown out after this, and we were just trying to stop it from smelling?
That's,
or is the chaylev being sold for some later purpose?
Maybe they actually are planning on preserving it for candles, for fuel. I don't know. I mean, not preserving it for. They're preserving it because they don't want it to stink today.
Right.
And then when Yom Tov is over, maybe they are planning on converting it for animals.
Goes for halacha, that you actually just take it away. In other words, you can carry it from the Makom Shlita.
Yeah.
And that would resolve the issue.
Mm-hmm.
It must be, why wouldn't you, for example, be able to give it to Kalubin, for example?
I don't know if they eat it.
Fat?
Yeah. Well,
for sure.
If so, then you solved your problem.
So,
because you can feed the dogs high enough.
Right. So since you're not, it must be he's got to get some value out of it. He's not going to feed his dogs something that he thinks has market value.
Mm-hmm. So you're not giving it to your dog, and you're not tossing it because you want to save it and use it for fuel. And what you want is, until Yontif is over, it shouldn't, you know, stink up your property. So you want to salt it, but using a little bit of salt is already ma'abed.
Right.
So therefore, we're telling you, you can't use the meat trick. You have to put it on pegs.
Yeah. The question is, why is it isn't tachana as well? If in fact it's...
Well, it's not tachana. You haven't done anything.
Well, you're salting it, you know, if the purpose of salting it is to preserve it to the point of being able to use it to make candles, for argument's sake, or fuel.
Right, but it's not. It's keeping it from smelling. I'll give you a different example. Let's say you have something, you have food out, right, from your meal on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be using it for leftovers on Sunday night. You put it in the fridge after your lunch. You're not putting it in the fridge in order to be able to serve it on Sunday. You're putting it in the fridge because it's going to be disgusting if it's left out. This is what we do with our food. When we're done with a meal, we put it away in the fridge. That's not hachana.
I think the salt basically turns it into a solid.
Well, two different things. You're talking about what salt does is it dehydrates things.
Yeah, it turns it into a solid, from liquid to a solid.
It's going to draw out the liquid.
Which then makes it capable of then using for purposes of... Keep going back to the candle, but basically that's kind of what I see the use that they have in mind here. But you're saying it's completely for the smell. There's nothing to do with the candle.
Well, no. But let's say he is going to keep it for a candle, even still. But that's not his goal here.
Right.
Now
he wants to get rid of the smell.
Right. It's not like a psych ratio problem.
That's what I'm just thinking.
Right. But it's not, because in a psych ratio situation, the resulting event is a prohibited event, and you are guaranteed to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the resulting event is, it is dehydrated, and it doesn't smell, and that's a permitted thing. The fact that you will benefit from that tomorrow doesn't change the fact that it's fundamentally permitted for me to do things that will keep something from smelling.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't be the issue. The issue is only that it actually is called ma'abed, and that's what keeps us from doing it.
I get it. I don't understand, but the afilu litzli havelim me'abed gomru.
When we said, were you here last week? I don't remember.
Last week,
I think you were. I think we had it. Didn't we have it at your place?
No.
I don't remember anything from last week. No, it was Gerard. We were at Gerard's house. So,
you're right. Yeah.
What we said was that we distinguished between different levels of salting. And we said that when you have food that you're going to boil up, meat that you're going to boil up, so you have to salt it heavily for kashering. However, when you're going to roast it, there's no need to kasher it because the fire of the roasting draws out the dam. The only purpose of salting is because you want it to taste nice. So use small amounts of salt. So that was true when we came to the hide, and what the Rashba is saying is that worked for the hide. It wasn't called ma'abed because it's a relatively small amount of salt compared to what you would do if you were really, you know, solving a hide. Whereas for the fats, the level of preservation needed is very small. You don't need a lot of salt. And therefore, even the minimal amount of salt used when you salt meat you're going to roast is already ma'abed. That's what the Rashba is contending.
It has to be that the salt is really relevant to whatever you do with that chaylev after. So in other words, it doesn't need salting to be used, either if it's being chucked out or even if it's being used as...
That's, it's going
to
be fuel, yeah.
The salt is irrelevant to that process. It's just for the sake of the smell that you're doing it.
Let's pretend it's not. Let's pretend for a second. I don't know. But
then a vitse would be permissible, because if that stopped you from doing the shechita, it would be in the same classification as the or.
Not necessarily. Because with the or, I wasn't allowed to do certain things.
But you were allowed to do the malicha because you were afraid to have said mama.
Only because the malicha was not ma'abed, because it was such a small amount compared to what you would do.
Right, but that's one explanation. That's not...
No, that was the explanation.
No, that was the explanation of the Rashba, is that the salt for sli...
No, but that was everybody last week, no?
Yeah, no, that was everyone last week. I'm talking about them with the feta.
Right, what I'm saying is, the reason why you were allowed to salt... Last week, the reason why you were allowed to salt in the ma'abed of the hide was because the salting that you did was minimal, and therefore didn't look like ma'abed. In the translating that into the case of the fats, because your salting is ma'abed, the fact that if we don't let you do this, you won't shout the animal is just too bad. We're not going to let you do ma'abed.
Right.
So that's the difference. This would not become in the cat, even if salting the fats was the way to turn it into fuel. That would not allow me to do salting, because I would still have a problem that the salting that you're going to do, this low level of salting, is ma'abed, and therefore it's going to be usser. Back to square one. Use the word.
I understand what you're saying. I'm viewing it as in the case with the meat, where we said the meat was on the hide. It's sort of they're telling us halakhically how you can salt the hide so that you won't have a hefset. And here, the fact that they're not taking that route to chalev, I think it's more of a issue of the salting is irrelevant to that. For the sake of the inconvenience of the smell, they're not allowing you to do this malacha.
We can look up. You know, we can let our phones and look up how you make be fed at the candles. But I don't know how it works. The Ran, quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes, offers two other answers. In Source Gimel. I believe he's quoting the Ran, because if I remember correctly, when he refers to his mentor, the Shita Mekubetzes himself is Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi. So he quotes a variety of Rishonim, generally by name, and sometimes not by name. So, but when he says Mori and uses the acronym Nun Resh Vav, which I gave you in brackets, means Natsrehu Rachmana Ben Atrehu, God should preserve him and protect him. I think he's referring to the Ran.
The Ran was his Rebbe?
So, I believe so,
really?
But I'm not sure.
It would have been hundreds of years later, wouldn't it? Isn't the Shita, like, much later?
The Shita is 14th century now.
I thought it was later, but...
No, I don't think so. The truth is, I don't use Shita Mekubetzes a whole lot. I'm using him here because he's helpful, but I don't use him a whole lot.
I thought he was an Ashkenazi.
Well, that's his last name.
So likely he would have been, an Ashkenazi in an Ashkenazi country.
All right, we're going to find out.
He used it a lot in Yeshiva.
Yeah, in Yeshiva he used it a ton.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's an Ashkenazi.
Okay, so no, you're right, he's later. He's 1520 to 1592.
Yeah, I think he was in either Prague or in...
Ottoman Palestine.
Oh, really? No,
Ottoman Palestine, according to Wikipedia.
Oh. The Zionist.
Yeah.
Well, you must have
interestingly, the Ari was a Talmud of his. I mean, I'm assuming Wikipedia knows what it's talking about. But
Talmud Shif Kibbutzis.
Yeah.
So his name is Ashkenazi. Well, I guess because
he learned from Sephardim. No, but he learned from Sephardim. Very interesting. Okay, but in any case, But then that doesn't make any sense for this, unless
this is in the Talmud of the Ra.
No, it can't be. But I have a different problem. The way I rendered the acronym, the Nun Resh Vav, is as though his Rebbe is alive. The truth is there is a version of this acronym which is past tense.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm not sure that this is referring to the Ran. Okay. Either way, he's quoting his Moreh, whoever we are associating
him with. It's also the style back in those days, even if he didn't learn from literally, but he held
him Moreh, yeah.
They still call him Moreh, even though
yeah.
he, you know.
Right, but calling him alive would be more challenging.
Yes, for sure.
So he says, this Rebbe of his, Asar Afilu Malicha Koldu. By the way, it's also possible he's not the speaker. This is the Shita Mekubetzes. He's quoting somebody else potentially.
Right. Right.
But anyway, Umorinero Asar Afilu Malicha Koldu. So he says, my Rebbe prohibited any form of malicha, any form of salting, va'afilu litzli agabe chalavim, even if you do it for the low level, for roasting, and you're going to do it on the fat, and so meaning you have meat on this, and you're salting it the way we described for the hide, mishum de lo dami lo'or, because this isn't like the hide case, deba'or amrinun misrami milsa. With the hide, we say, this just happened to be so, and I added an explanation in brackets, kolomar, kahava, shebasarohaya al ha'or. It happened to be that the meat was on the hide. In other words, the reason why it works with the hide is not only because the salting I'm doing is minimal, but also because It's clear, I want to eat this, I want to eat the meat, I need to salt it, whether for taste or whatever it is. It happened to be on the hide when I did it. Mishum de lo aser lebas labasa. That only works because the hide isn't going to prohibit eating the meat. Aval chalavim, but when you're dealing with the fats, kaven de middo bedili inshi, since people separate from the fats are treif, he isn't going to salt meat to eat it when it is still attached to the fat. That will prohibit the fat. The fat's going to be treif, right? Because we say that maliach, when you salt something, there's absorption of taste. It's going to be very clear to everybody what you really want to do is salt the fats because you're not eating the meat. That's his point. How are you going to say?
No.
Okay. That's one argument.
Then saying the meat would be usher?
Yeah. Immediately usher. Yeah. Veli nira, and he says further, it appears to me, the sha'ani or that hide is different for another reason. Sheyesh lo tikun gadol, the ibud yafe mimalicha benisinasa lifnei hadarson. Vilkach lo muchamilsa. He says, another difference is that with the hide, the salting isn't the complete process. Right? It's when it gets trampled. That's really the process. So therefore, you haven't completed your ibud with your salting. Whereas with the fats, there's no better way to preserve them. There's nothing else you're going to be doing. So that's another reason, the Shita Mikubetz's quotes, for why that doesn't work. Okay. Good. So what we've said so far, back on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, is that we have a machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanakhama says, no salting, no flipping, no nothing. And Rabbi Yeshua says, put it up on pegs. So then we're getting a statement from Rav Masna, but there'll be two versions of this statement. And by the way, I wonder actually whether the Tanakhama and Rav Yeshua are really disagreeing. Notice he's talking about a different case. On the one hand, the Tanakhama is saying don't do anything. On the other hand, he didn't say don't do anything. He said don't do these two things, and Rav Yeshua doesn't disagree. So I'm not actually so clear on that. But Rav Masna says the following: Amar Rav Masna halachik Rav Yeshua, which makes it sound like it is a machlokes, and now he's paskening. I follow Rav Yeshua, he says in the first view. Ika de Amri, and then you have an alternate version. Amar Rav Masna in halachik Rav Yeshua. He says no, well, it does not follow Yeshua. The funny thing about this is that we're going to see on Daf Yud Gimel a Tosfos, which is going to say that you don't find this. That when you have one version, and then you have an Ika de Amri, they're not polar opposites. But this is exactly that. This is a polar opposite. So we'll have to see that when we get to the Tosfos on Yud Gimel. But the Rav Masna says, no, Allah is not like Rabbi Yeshua. So Bishlam Alamandu Amar Halacha Rabbi Yeshua, if you're going to take the view that he sides with Rabbi Yeshua, it's drech. So I understand why you needed to say that. Salka daita chamina, because I would have thought, yachid v'rabim halacha kirabim, that when there's a loner view, Rabbi Yeshua, and then there's the majority view, which we assume the Tanakhama represents, I would have thought, halacha kirabim, you follow the majority view. Kamash malan halacha ki yachid. So it's teaching me the law follows the individual. That's why he had to paskin like Rabbi Yeshua. Now, well, I want to come back to that principle of yachid v'rabim halacha kirabim, because that's actually not so clear cut. So I want to come back to that. But we have to see the sugya first. Elo lamanda amar ein halacha. However, if you're going to tell me that Rav Masna said the law does not follow Rabbi Yeshua, pshita, then why did you need to tell me that? Yachid v'rabim halacha k'rabim. The law follows the majority. I don't need you to, we have a machlokes based on Beis Shammai. No one needs to stand up and say ein halacha k'divrei Beis Shammai. Right? Halacha k'beis Hillel, thank you. So why do you need to tell me ein halacha k'Rav Masna? My default assumption would have been we follow the Tanakhama. Mahu disema mistaber tame de Rabbi Yeshua. Yeah, but you might have said that Rabbi Yeshua would win because his argument makes sense. De ilo sharisle mimna velo shachit. Because if he wouldn't permit him to do this with the fat, he wouldn't shaft. He says, I'm going to stink up my house for the rest of Yantif.
Okay, so when the Chachamim are saying Mahavrim, that's just flipping the Chelev over.
Yeah.
Okay, and I assume putting Chelev on the stakes
is Aser.
Right, so they do argue.
I mean, if it's the way we take it, the Shita Mekubetzes had said that you're actually taking it from the Shechita and the skinning and putting it right on the pegs. I don't see why that's more malacha, but I don't know. I've never done this.
Okay.
They lived it. So his thought is, I might have followed Rabbi Yeshua even though he's the individual, because his point about making sure the guy gets to Shecht is sensible. So Kamash Malan therefore teaches me, despite that justification, Ein Halachik Rabbi Yeshua. That's the idea. But now, what we've seen here is the opposite of what we said before with the hide. By ruling against Rabbi Yeshua, by saying that, effectively, if you don't like what's going on with the hide, with the fats, don't shecht, we're now in opposition to what we said regarding the hide. Right? When it came to the hide, we said, we'll let you do it, don't worry about it, we just want to make sure you have some chasyantif. Right? And therefore, we'll go out of our way to permit. When it comes to the fats, you're telling me, no, sorry, you don't want to shecht, don't shecht. It's your problem. So what's the difference between the fats case and the hide case? That's what the Gemara wants to know. What's the difference between the fats case, where you say, if he doesn't shecht, he doesn't shecht, and the hide in front of people to trample it, where you said, no, we have to make sure he does this because we want to make sure he shechts. So the Gemara answers, top of Amid Beis, Hasam lo mukha milsam mishum dechazi lemizgale. When you're dealing with the hide, it's not only the fact that we want to make sure he shechts, it's that really there isn't anything really bad about what he's doing in order to preserve it. He's going to throw the hide out there where people are walking. They're going to trample it. But it also is a piece of leather that people could have laid down on if they wanted to relax a little bit by the road. So therefore, there's another reason why this is okay. Haha, whereas regarding the fats, there's no other reason for you to be doing this. Asi lemeimar, people are going to say, "My time sharuli rabbanon. Why the rabbanon permit me to do this with the fats? Ki yechidu lisrach, so that it won't stink." So mali lemishtechinu, mali lememlachinu. What's the difference between laying it out on the pegs or whatever I'm doing, and salting it? And they'll actually come to salt it, which we're calling ma'abed. So the Gemara's answer is, it's not all about making sure you get the shecht. Because it's not a blank check. In order to make sure he shechts, we're gonna license him to do whatever he wants. That's not true. You have to have some kind of credible justification for the activity you want to do, which exists when it comes to the hide, but it does not exist when it comes to the fats. You follow?
So basically, he's not allowed to shecht at the end of the day. He would be allowed to shecht, but he can't do anything with the chelev.
Right, yeah, according to this view of Ramazna. Correct.
If there's value to it, it's going to be a mechat toes, basically. So, I mean, you always have some moment.
By the way, just as a psak, we follow this view of Ramazna, the latter view, that it's against Rabbi Yeshua, and you're out of luck with the fats.
Yeah, okay, although he takes into consideration, I mean, your crowd, it may stink a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if I'm reading this, and it's sort of what I said beforehand, I don't think there's a hefset mamon on the chelev. Even if you let it sit, there's no hefset. It's an inconvenience.
It just thinks that it smells.
Yeah,
I think so too.
Unless you're going to say that he wants it, unless you want to say he wants it for the fuel and that's some kind of a loss, but we haven't given any expression of that in the Gemara.
Right.
You know, with the hide, we said it explicitly.
It could spoil. I mean, it's conceivable. It
but doesn't say salting right. Is needed for it. Salting is just to prevent the smell.
Right. We don't know the process of converting beef fat into fuel.
Is that directly in the Gemara, or is it just in Rashi? For the purposes of the smell.
The Gemara itself. When it kihechid lelisrach on the third line.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way,
I mean, mind you, it doesn't have to mean the smell. Lemisrach is a term used for decaying.
Right.
which we naturally associate with the smell, but it could be also disqualification from use as fuel.
Right.
It's just no one here has said anything about using it for fuel. No one in the Gemara, not in Rashi, not any of the Mefarshim that I saw.
By the way, I just saw that the Shita's Rebbe was the Radvaz. It apparently was alive during his...
So it's life. Not the Radvaz. I looked at the Wikipedia page, and they had another member of the Ibn Avi Zimra family, but it wasn't Radvaz.
It wasn't Radvaz?
It was Shlomo Ibn Avi Zimra. Yeah, maybe his brother. Okay. The timing is right, but yeah, they named somebody else. I'd like to look at a more authoritative source also, to really know. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, last bit here before the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda quotes Shmuel regarding salting meat for cooking on Yontif. So this is a tangent. He says, Moleach Adam Kama Chatichos Basar B'Basa Achas. Nothing to do with animal hide, nothing to do with fat. He says, you're allowed to salt multiple pieces of meat at once. Even though you're really only going to need one piece, and that way the rest of them will be preserved. Now, you shefted an animal, you have all this meat out there, the meat should be salted, but you're not planning on cooking it all on Yontif, you're allowed to throw salt on the entire batch. Rashi explains why. Because it's only one tircha. Once you're doing the tircha of getting the salt, I suppose, it's not a big deal for you to do this, and that's allowed. Rav Ada Bar Ava Ma'arim Umalach Garma Garma. Rav Ada Bar Ava played a trick, and he would salt piece by piece. In other words, he would say, "I'm going to salt this piece because this is the one I want." Then he'd finish salting it and say, "You know what? That piece over there is better," and he'd pick up that one, and so on, and go through the entire batch. And end up salting every piece in the batch. And apparently he did this every Yontif. Like, it says that he used to do this.
Didn't they have the shita as to why you could do things on Yontif that would more than what you need for your own personal use?
Because Shema Gorchen let the guests may show up.
Yeah,
so we're not invoking that here, probably because he's not planning on actually cooking it. In other words, that's what we allow you to cook, because then guests may show up. But what he's doing isn't even cooking. He's not getting that far. But the big question is, why in the world is this okay? We're going to get to in the Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin, they're going to talk about Erev Tavshilin. And the question of, what do you do for somebody who forgets to make an Erev Tavshilin? So, someone else cooks, they use his food, whatever, they have this haroma possibility. And they say there that we will not allow you to do a haroma. We're not allowing you to play the trick. Why is the trick okay in our Gemara? And Tosfos notes, it's a popular ha'arama. If you see the top Tosfos, Ma'ari Mumalach Garma Garma, he says, V'chein regilin ha'olam, that is in fact the practice, Shema'arimin va'ochlin ma'at min ha'tarnagoles, the Bach in Gimel adds, Shema'arimin v'tsolin va'ochlin ma'at min ha'tarnagoles, that they'll play this clever trick, and they will roast the entire chicken, and in fact, they just eat the liver out of it. But they're going to roast the entire thing, which is extra effort, as opposed to leaving it and it'll go bad. But he says it only works before you've eaten the chicken liver. You can't eat the chicken, roast part of it, eat that, and then roast the rest and not eat it. That doesn't work. You have to roast the whole thing before you've eaten something. So the question is, what's the justification? So if you take a look on your sheet...
When Tosfos is talking now, he's talking about roasting the whole chicken at one time, not the karma karma, or is it both the same thing?
Well, his first case is roasting the whole thing, but then he says, if you're going to do it piece by piece, you can't eat it and then roast more pieces.
Why would he allow the piece by piece if you have the ability to roast the whole thing at one time? If you're worried about tircha.
Maybe you don't. Maybe it's already been cut up. I don't know. But take a look at Source Dalet, where the Rashba asks, which haramas are we allowing, which haramas are we not allowing? And he sets up an important principle, and the Ran says this as well. He says, Ve'ein omrim b'ha'aramos zu doma lezu. You can't compare one trick and another trick and say, well, you allow this one, therefore you allow that one. Why? When it came to the hide, we said you were allowed to salt on it for you know, with a quantity that's used, the quantity of salt used for roasting. Barmina b'Yerushalmi malachacha u'malachacha ad malachkule. The Yerushalmi's formula for how you do that salting of the meat on the hide is that you leave a bunch of little pieces of meat in different spots. You salt here, and you salt here, and you salt here, and by the time you're done, the whole thing's been salted. The ilu b'pirkin de la kaman, the one I just mentioned, the Gemara is going to say, gabemishalo hiniach erubei tavshilin, when the guy did not do an erub tavshilin, asrina late feimi mezid. We actually, if he's careless there, we prohibit more for him than we do for someone who intentionally didn't do an erub tavshilin, for reasons the Gemara will discuss. But the point is, haram is not always allowed. You can't just draw an analogy and say, well, that haram is okay, this haram is okay too. The yesh li lomar, de haramos de hacha, Hainu davka bidvarm shahefse beh balahen machmas simchas yom tov. Vishalom machmas pshi oso. He says, the harama that we're allowing here is talking about where the loss is going to be in terms of simchas yom tov. And it's not a function of any carelessness on your part. Kimlichas ha'or, umlichas garma garma, like the case of salting the hide or salting piece by piece, the meat on the hide or salting piece by piece is happening in the Gemara with Avad Bar Ava. Why is it not his carelessness? Because you're not getting any meat for Yantav unless you shecht on Yantav. This is pre-refrigeration. He's going to lose all the other pieces. So we say, okay, fine. So you can make this trick because you don't have other options. But if you're Erev, if you're dealing with the Erev Tavshilin, he was careless. He didn't do an Erev Tavshilin. Or he set one up, but somebody ate it because they were careless. Or it was lost because they were careless. They didn't guard it properly. That's why they prohibited the Ha'arama. And that's a general rule with Ha'arama, that the we will be allowed to do it, we're more likely to be allowed to do it, if we didn't create the problem in the first place. If the problem is a function of the law, rather than a function of our own carelessness.
Why is it called harama if it's allowed?
Because what you're doing, when you say, well, I'm not sure which piece of meat I want, I think I want this one, I'm going to salt this one. And then you say, no, I actually want that one.
But
you're creating an appearance that isn't true. That's why it's called harama. The appearance is the trick. The appearance of I'm planning on eating the piece of meat I'm salting. The onlooker who will now understand that really this isn't supposed to be happening. In other words, the onlooker, if I just salted everything, if I took a piece out and said this is what I'm eating, and I'm going to pour salt on it, and then I'm going to pour salt on the rest of them anyway, then that conveys that it's okay to salt meat stam for preservation for later on Yontif. So what we wanted you to do is create an appearance that doesn't reflect reality. Pretend that you're actually eating these.
What's the difference?
Yeah, it doesn't make it, at the end of the day, it doesn't make a difference because you're allowed to salt all the meat here.
No, but you're not.
You are?
No.
At the end of the day,
But you're a ritual sense. Well, you salt everything.
Not where you plan on not eating them. Oh, and yes, the Rav the Barava disagrees.
He says you need a trick.
Yes. Rabbi Yehuda, what he's will be fine. He'll say, go ahead.
Difference at the end of the day.
Correct. No, according to him, no harama is needed. It isn't the harama.
Right, because you're allowed to do it anyway.
Correct.
But he's also allowed to cook all of it, right?
Everybody agrees you can cook all of it.
The cooking is not a problem.
Yeah. The cooking isn't the problem. The problem is solving and not cooking.
One piece
you
can cook
right.
At all.
Yes.
No problem.
But basically, the problem isn't the salting. The problem is the Maris Ayin of the salting. In other words, it's the appearance of people that are onlooking. God knows what you're doing. Okay, so it's the appearance of the people that, it's how it appears to the people that see what you're doing.
Correct.
So this is
Maris Ayin, essentially.
So basically, they have to talk really loud to people that walk.
Yes, put up a sign.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's more to say about Ha'arama. We're going to come up against Ha'arama multiple times in this Masechta. It's a big issue in general.
But based on it being sandwiched between this, the chelet being between this case of the meat and the case of the hide, the chelet again appears to be a case where there is no hefsed if you don't salt.
Because we assume, but again, I don't.
Not clear.
I really want to know more about this fat process.
Yeah, can we read something about this?
Sorry.
No, we have.
It's not so easy to make a distinction.
The other thing that I'd wanted to see was this business of Yachid Barabim Halacha Karabim, because there's a lot to say about it. We'll start it today, we'll finish it maybe next week. But we do indeed say, yes, Yachid Barabim Halacha Karabim. That's the principle. One example of it is the classic Gemara in the beginning of Brachas. You remember the story of Rabbi Gamliel's sons who come home from the party. So if you take a look at source hey, that hashtol shmielu had Rabbi Gamliel. Right, the kids come home and they ask him, so until when can we say Shema? They didn't know. They didn't know Ishita. Now they're going to find out. So Hachi Kiam relay. No, this is what they were saying to him. Rabbanon pligi ilavach. Right, we know that not everybody agrees with you regarding when the latest time to say Shema is. Is it Chatos or is it, first light? So v'yachid v'rabim halachik rabim. Should we say the law follows the Rabbanon? Because they're the many. Odoma Rabbanon kvasach svira lehu. Or do we say no? The Rabbanon agree with you fundamentally that you have until first light. But they limit you to midnight because they want to keep people from sinning. Are they serious in their opposition? Or are they not serious in their opposition? And to which Rabbi Gamliel responded, the Rabbanon agree with me that you have all night long, and therefore you still have to say Shema. And they only said, Achatzos, to keep people from sinning. But the point that I'm bringing here is that it's accepted in that Gemara, Yachid v'Rabim, indeed, we say, Halacha ke Rabim. The Rama codifies this in a source, Vav, regarding a Sanhedrin. V'cheinim haya Yachid neged Rabim, holchen acha Rabim b'chol makom. This, in general, is a very important sif to know. It's Choshen Mishpat Chavhei Beis. There's a lot in there that's very important for understanding Pesach. But he says, if it's individual versus community, versus many, so we follow the Rabbim. Va'afilu eina Rabbim maskibim mitam echad. Even if the group all has different reasons for what they said, right? There are three chachamim on one side, one on the other, and each of the three disagrees with the one for a different reason. So they're really not three people taking a stand together. Nonetheless, they're ruling a certain way against the one. Ela kol achad yesh otam b'fnei atzmo, ho'o b'heim maskibim le'inyan hadin, Nigru Rabim Va'azlin and Basrayu. Since they fundamentally agree as to what the law is, they are called Rabim. That's the rule. And the Gra adds, if you take a look at Zion, the Kama Makomos Yachad Rabim Malachak Rabim Hamadaktek Yimtza Bein Lakula Bein Lachumra V'mamon Ube Isur V'zeu Shamu B'chol Makom. When they say Halachak Rabim everywhere, the reason they say the Halacha is Karabim everywhere, they mean whether you talk about Mamon Isur Lakula, Lachumra, doesn't make a difference. We always follow the Rabbim. So there are certain caveats, though, for this rule. And that's what I thought was interesting to note. There are a few things that are interesting to note. But first of all, the caveats. So one caveat is that this is only true if the two sides are equal in wisdom. And for that, we bring the classic Gemara on Beis Hillel Beis Shammai from Yevamos. If you remember, the Mishnah in Yevamos says that even though Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai disagreed about a major issue of Arayos, nonetheless, they married each other. Which should not be misunderstood. I've seen people quote that Gemara to say, see, even if you disagree with someone halachically, you can still eat his kashrus and don't worry about it and you can find. That's not what that Gemara says. What the Gemara says is they had enough respect for each other that they would inform the other if there was something in the relationship that the other one didn't hold from. So the analogy for kashrus would be...
And both of them kept kosher anyway, BSU.
Yes. But the point is, the analogy in kashrus would be, you can eat in my house because you know that I would tell you if this wasn't kosher according to your shita. I would let you know. That's what it's talking about. If you take a look at source ches, that's the sugya. It's not awesome. Megillah Nikreis Be'achadasar B'shneimasar B'shloshasar B'bavasar B'chamishasar L'pachas V'lo Yoseh, right? The famous Mishnah about the dates for reading the Megillah. So Amar Le'Reish Lakish Lo B'Yochanan Ikri Kad Lo Sisko to do. He says, what are you doing? You're making the Jews into agudos agudos groups. So this one reads on this day, this one reads on that day. Well, you can't do that. So the Gemara then goes into a discussion about agudos agudos, and from that the Gemara says, well, if you don't like agudos agudos, having the Jews be split up into different groups, ha beis shammai matir hatzaros la'achim u beis hillel osrin. Right? Beis Shammai says, in certain discussion here, the tzaros of certain arayos are allowed to marry the brothers, and Beis Hillel says, no, they're not. So the Gemara says, that's not a problem. Misavrit asu beis shammai kidivrayim? Lo asu beis shammai kidivrayim. Beis Shammai held that way, but they didn't actually practice it. That's one answer. Rabbi Yochanan amar asu va'asu, and Rabbi says, no, they did. Ubeplugta de Rabu Shmuel. And that, in fact, is the machlokas Rav and Shmuel. The Rav amar lo asu beis shammai kidivrayim. Ushmuel amar asu v'asu. That's a machlokas. This is what Beis Shammai did. Amos. Well, when did Beis Shammai do this, that you say they did their own thing? Ilei makodem baskol. If it's before the baskol came out, the paskin like Beis Hillel, my time of demanda amar lo asu. Then what's the rationale for saying they didn't follow their own route? There was no reason they couldn't do their own thing. Well, achar baskol, my time of demanda amar asu. And if it's after the baskol, then why would you say they did their own thing? The baskol already ruled. So, ibayis emakodim baskol, ibayis emala achar baskol.
The baskol was Rabbi Shua and Rabbi
Lozhi? No, the baskol that follows Beis Hillel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, different baskol.
But they didn't listen to it, no?
Well, that's the thing. That's what the Gemara is
saying. Rabbi Shua didn't listen to it.
That's a different baskol. Different.
They put him in chayim.
Wrong door. So, he says, he says, ibayis emakodim baskol. If you want, I'll tell you what. This was actually before the baskol. And yet there's a view that says they didn't follow their own view. Why wouldn't they have followed their own view? Ukagon de Beis Hillel Ruba. Beis Hillel was the majority. So Laman de Amar Lo Asu, according to the view that they didn't do their own thing, that was because Daha Beis Hillel Ruba. That's because Beis Hillel was the majority. Uman de Amar Asu, the view that said they did do their own thing, was Kiazlinan Basa Ruba Hechidichi Hadadi Ninhu. They follow the majority where the two sides are the same. But hacha beis shammai mechadidi tfei. But here beis shammai was sharper. They felt we're smarter, and therefore I don't care if they're the majority. We're the ones who are right, and therefore they did their own thing. So that's what I wanted to bring here, just to conclude the line. We always say malachar baskol. Perhaps it was post baskol. Mandamar lo asu donafka baskol. The view that said they didn't follow their own view in practice was because baskol has ruled. Mandamar asu, the view that says they did their own thing, will say because they were like Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Shia Damar in Mashkiyam Abaskol. He says lo bashamayim. He's not up to baskol to paskin.
But what this is saying is that if someone is not willing to give proper respect to the Rav and says they're smarter, they can do what they want.
Right. So you have to be able to back it up.
Yeah.
Any rabbi that is giving a psak, I assume he is backing it up with his interpretation of things.
Back up the idea that you're of greater accomplishment.
Right.
In other words, we've generally speaking, in the history of psak, what has made somebody a posek more than anything else was publication. When somebody came out with a work of halacha, like the Mishnah Torah, right? No, it is. But there's a reason for that, because you have to be able to demonstrate that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
When someone came up with a sefer that was accepted, that showed insight, that was a reason why people would say, okay, so this is somebody we're going to follow in halacha.
Right. But I understand what you're saying. But I'm saying for some individual who feels that he's knowledgeable and can back it up, he's able to do what he wants.
But there were always, that was always
following
the
rough.
Well, not without following the Rav, but without following the Rabbin.
Right.
Without following the Rav.
Because that's different.
Yaakov Edzin is a perfect good example of that.
What do you mean?
A lot of people disagreed with him halachically, but he passed like himself. That's basically, he says, I know what I'm doing, and that was it.
Okay. I mean, he was interesting on many fronts.
Yeah.
How did you work with Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel?
What do you mean?
To say there is a majority of Beit Hillel, not everybody passed him, but it...
Well, this isn't Hillel and Shammai. This is their Talmidim.
So
Hillel and Shammai are not in this.
Yeah. So who is paskening? Wasn't there one voice for each house, or was it like?
So no, the Talmidim of Beis Hillel all had a certain approach, which they, had
so
received.
All of them, yeah. Each of them was counting as one voice. So if there were more Beit Hillel, they were considered the majority.
Yeah, and that's what the Gemara talks about. Nimnu v'gamru. They actually had a vote, and
right.
Yeah. Yes, each one counted as an individual voice.
When did they have the machlokes that they forgot 300 Piskei Halacha, so-called Piskei Halacha, because of the argument in
there is such a discussion, but I don't remember when.
Must have been before the Baskol, I guess, eh? That's when the Baskol came out and basically said...
I have to go back and look it up. I don't remember.
What happened after the Baskol? Did they stop arguing? That was the end of it?
Well, that's what the Gemara is asking here. That's exactly what the Gemara wants to know. Did they concede after the Baskol, or did they say, no, we follow Rabbi Yeshua, and Mashkichim of Baskol, and too bad?
They stopped, you know, at that point, did they basically, you know, did Beis Shammai basically disappear off the face of the earth?
No. No, they retained their identity to the end. Because we know that in later generations, there are people who identify
right.
themselves as Shamuti. Right, Rabbi Eliezer is
right.
Shamuti.
Right.
So...
You think
if you cite him, there was a story that Beit
which Hillel, has an irony with Rabbi Yeshua being quoted here, but
actually Beit Hillel changed their opinions according to Beit Shammai. No?
Yeah, we talked about that also.
Okay,
the fight between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. I don't know how the chronology works for when each event happened, and the Yudches Gezeros and the Gemara and Shabbos
and so on.
Right, there must be a way to track the chronology. Someone's done it, but I don't know.
Those be political too, right? Ideological.
And there are things in there that people read that way, and don't know. I don't know.
But you have an Yerushalmi where he will, like Rabbi Yochanan will quote Beit Shammai when he voices his opinion. And not necessarily Beit Hillel.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that he's holding Halacha.
No, Beit Shammai exists. Like they don't disappear off the face of the earth.
He gives the appearance that Halacha is like Beit Shammai in certain cases.
I'd have to see an example.
Case of Kesulia.
We have six cases, no?
Well, we had this whole debate as to whether we're... back up. We always quote... both views, like the Gemara and the Mishnah and Edyo says, we always quote both views. Whether we take that as so that in future generations, if someone comes up with this idea, we'll be able to tell them, yes, it was mentioned and defeated, right?
But he's not actually quoting Beit Shammai. He's saying that you're allowed to do Kisui Adam on Yom.
But we didn't know whose view he was following. Which Ibcha did we end up with?
Oh, okay.
All right, I'm going to say to pick up with this next week because there's more to see on this Yachid Rabban thing. Because there's quite a bit here that's very interesting to see. So we'll pick up with that, God willing, next week. Charlie, do you want another shot?